Welcome to our midweek show. I'm Coral Azus. First up, the Prime Minister of Iceland resigned yesterday. David Gunnlaugsson had been under pressure to give up his job after he was connected to what's being called the Panama Papers. These are more than 11 million documents. They were published Sunday by a global network of journalists. They're called Panama Papers because they're allegedly connected to a law firm in Panama called Mossack Fonseca. Why is this making news? Mossack Fonseca is accused of creating offshore bank accounts for people in power worldwide. It's possible these accounts were used to illegally hide money. The law firm's also suspected of creating shell companies, ones that don't actually conduct business. They could be used legally. They could also be used illegally to help operating businesses avoid paying taxes. Mossack Fonseca says it's done nothing wrong and that there's nothing in the Panama Papers that suggests it has. In fact, the firm says the documents were stolen from its business. But because it's set up so many thousands of companies, and because those companies have been linked to some powerful global officials, international authorities suspect that some illegal activity was going on.
The Panama Papers reveal a complex scheme and web of intrigue that goes across the globe. Those who were using the offshore companies, the clients, did so by hiring intermediaries, 14,000 banks, law firms, and other middlemen. The main destinations were Hong Kong, the United Kingdom, Switzerland, and the United States. Now, it's these intermediaries that dealt with Mossack Fonseca in Panama City. In fact, Mossack Fonseca may not even have known the true identities and owners of all the various shell companies that they set up. But they were setting up these shell companies and these nominees on an industrial scale. There were 113,000 set up in the Caribbean around the British Virgin Islands, followed by 48,000 in Panama itself. And then, of course, you've got those out in the Western Pacific that were also set up. Now, there is no doubt that many of these offshore companies were set up for entirely legitimate purposes. But the size and scale of this operation and the people who were involved leaves perhaps no one in any doubt that there were also nefarious motives, which would have included the avoidance of tax, money laundering, shielding from creditors and spouses, and of course, the avoidance and dodging of sanctions. And once again, it's on a global scale. Richard Quest, CNN, New York.
Yesterday, there were primary contests in the U.S. state of Wisconsin for Republicans and Democrats. CNN.com will have the latest results on them. When the state contests are wrapped up, if neither of the two Democratic candidates or none of the three Republican candidates wins enough delegates to clinch their party's nomination, the final decision will be made at the national conventions this summer. What's called a brokered, a contested, or an open convention is possible for both parties, but it might be more likely on the Republican side with three candidates still in the race. That could make the Republican National Convention complicated, unpredictable, and fascinating.
You may look at the delegate count back there as all these candidates try to get to that magic number to clinch the nomination and think, at the convention, these delegates will go and represent the view of millions of Americans from all those primaries and caucuses. And they will, to a degree. But if nobody gets that magic number, then many of these delegates will become free agents. They can vote for whomever they wish. And then the people who are selected to do the job can make a big difference. Let's look at Tennessee as one example. 58 delegates here based on the popular vote. Donald Trump gets 33, Ted Cruz gets 16, Marco Rubio gets 9. Under the state rules, and every state has different rules, they must vote that way for the first two ballots at the national convention. But after that, they can change, and the Trump campaign has already accused the state party of trying to push people into the delegation who will vote against him. If that happened, in a worst-case scenario, he could find that he lost a state that he already won. What about Louisiana over here? This was basically a tie for that state's 46 delegates. Donald Trump got 18 of them. Ted Cruz got 18. Marco Rubio got 5, and 5 were uncommitted. So we already don't know what these people are going to do. But after the first ballot, the entire Louisiana delegation becomes unbound, meaning it could all become a big question mark as to how this delegation is going to vote. What about North Dakota over here? North Dakota only has 28 delegates, but there never was a popular vote there. The state party simply met in its own convention, and they decided who the delegates would be to go to the national convention. It looked like Ted Cruz did pretty well getting his supporters in the delegation, but we don't know because none of these people has to say whom they're going to vote for before or even during the convention. So again, big question mark. Bottom line, multiply this time all the different states. If you get into a contested convention and you go in vote after vote after vote, it won't just be the Bayou state where a lot of people will be seeing some voodoo voting going on.
Making one request a day is the way to get on our roll call. The site, CNNStudentNews.com. Khalsa School is watching from Surrey. It's in the province of British Columbia, Canada. Shout out to the Old Yale Road campus. We're visiting the capital of Rhode Island today. That's Providence and the home of the Knights of Central High School. And flying over Parma Community Middle School, we welcome the Aviators. Thank you for watching from Parma, Ohio. According to information from the U.S. Census, almost half of all African-American children in the country don't grow up with a steady father figure in their lives. Sheldon Smith was one of these people. But when his daughter was born in 2009, he didn't just commit to staying involved in her life. He later started a nonprofit program to help other young men do the same thing. Since 2010, almost 200 young fathers have completed it.
Growing up, my father was in and out of my life. I remember when I was a young boy, my father said he was going to pick me up. I sat on the porch all day, and he never came. I grew up broken. I just started hanging with the wrong people. When I got out of jail, I was able to go back to high school, graduate on time. My daughter, Jada, is the light of my life.
You ready to go around in the circle?
Wanting to be the best example for her, that is my number one concern. A lot of young men face the same issues that I was facing.
My father was in and out of my life.
My father was a heroin addict.
He ain't teach me how to be a man.
He didn't know who I was.
I don't even want to go see that man.
How many of y'all looking to be role models to y'all own kids?
I wanted to provide these men with the skills that they need to be great role models and successful fathers to their children.
A lot of guys come out and say, I ain't grow up with my daddy, so I really don't know how to be a father. If it played an effect on you, what are you going to do to better your child life?
We teach the fathers parenting skills, life skills, when they receive a job, a GED, or a trade, along with a stipend.
I'm in this program trying to do better, but my son wouldn't have to go through what I went through.
Amen.
It's not a mandatory program. So these young men are really volunteering to get the help and support that they actually need.
Without Sheldon, I'd probably still be out on the street somewhere. He really opened up my eyes, and he inspired me to go back in school.
Come on, Dad, I follow you.
The program taught me I can be a man by being a father to my baby. I'm a full-time dad again.
When I look at these young men, I see me in them all the time.
So three girls and one boy.
Yeah, three girls, one boy.
Oh, we go need two bathrooms in the house, man.
Fatherhood doesn't come with a manual. I'm able to help young men turn their lives around. I'm breaking the cycle of fatherless homes.
What started as an Easter egg hunt on Good Friday turned into a hunt for suspected burglars. In a small village outside London, kids were having fun with their families when they noticed a police helicopter had flown up and that two men were racing across a field. After seeing where the men were headed, the kids dropped to the ground and formed a human arrow, pointing police toward the suspects. Shortly afterward, the suspects were arrested. We'll be quick to point out that the kids fielded the challenge well. It's easy to see Plow, their excellent detective work, made a great point and helped catch the suspects with police. I'm Carl Azuz. Hope you'll direct your attention our way again tomorrow.